And welcome now to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio with pianist Andrew Armstrong, and he's performing with the Green Lake Festival of Music for the next, off and on, I guess, for the next several days. Welcome to the Midday.
Thanks, Norman. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming down from Green Lake today, and before that, of course, from Massachusetts.
That's right. Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm trying to learn how to say it properly. Worcester.
Is that how they say it there?
I can't quite get
Worcester.
It.
Well, enough time and you'll get it. And, of course, there's some Wisconsin pronunciations you might have to pick up if you're going to spend much time around here, too.
I'm unable to say the word B-A-G correctly.
Yeah, it's tough to get the vowel just right.
Yeah.
But practice makes perfect. As you ought to know, you have 50 piano concertos in your repertory.
That's right. I've played, at this point, I think it's somewhere around 55 or 60 that I've played with orchestras. And for several years, it was sort of my modus operandi that I would specify, you know, please, you know, choose something. You know, a lot of times conductors or orchestras will make the selections and I'll say, could you select something I haven't already played? And I felt like this, I had so much to build and it was important to stay active that way.
Wow, I would think so. So which one have you been playing most recently?
Let's see. Just very recently, I played the Bach D minor keyboard concerto.
Nice.
I played it on piano, but I would love to play that on a harpsichord at some point if all of the scholars who play harpsichord brilliantly would maybe close their ears, since I'm more of a pianist. But I'll get to play Mozart Kirschel 414 here in Wisconsin. August 18th up at Door County at the Peninsula Music Festival.
Nice.
With the great Victor Yampolsky conducting. So I'm really looking forward to that.
As everybody else should be, too. What are you playing with the Green Lake Festival of Music? What's your role in the thing?
Well, the Green Lake Festival of Music, I was able to play a solo piano recital for them, including Rachmaninoff's brilliant second piano sonata and Beethoven's Les Adieux sonata.
Nice.
Just a few weeks ago, and some shorter encore type pieces like Ravel's Alberada del Grazioso. Yes, another one I need to work on my pronunciation. I appreciated your C in the middle of Grazioso.
Yeah, sure.
Right now, my function at Green Lake is a new discovery for me, and one of the great gifts I've ever received in this life. I'm getting to direct the chamber music camp there for 2 weeks. So we have young artists who have come in to learn the skills of playing with others in intimate settings. And I have a world-class faculty of string players that are giving them all the gifts they can. So we're having a great time over there.
Yeah, I was up at Madeline Island at the summer chamber music up there, which they used to call the Madeline Island Summer Music Camp. And one of the big things they stress with their chamber music, as it sounds you do too, is teamwork. They develop the teamwork that's required for playing in a small ensemble.
Well, I hope you'll forgive me if I jump in with a kind of a deep thought about all of what feels like a deep thought to me. I feel like it's more applicable. People, we think of classical music as, you know, receding into history with Beethoven every year. He's a year older. But I feel that the lessons that we are investigating in chamber music are perhaps more urgent and applicable to everyday life than ever. Because if you show up having studied your part in a piece of music and you feel that the phrase should go in one way and your colleague hears it a different way, success in chamber music can't come from duking it out and the top dog winning and having their point of view taken. And there's so much growth to be had for everyone when you find a way to give all of your spirit as openly and warmly as you can to another person's point of view, and as they say in To Kill a Mockingbird, to walk in that other person's shoes and really live it and find how to love and commit to their point of view. And I don't think I need to be too heavy-handed in saying, in society at large, the more we push for that, I think it will always serve us well in whatever avenue we might be walking on at that moment.
Now, on to Chopin. And
Chopin.
Scherzo, and what does this title mean to you?
Yeah, Scherzo number 2 in B-flat minor by Frédéric Chopin. you know, traditionally scherzo had been an interior movement in a larger structure, in a symphony or a sonata or a string quartet. And it would be in a simple ABA form, which just is a fancy way of saying an opening section, a contrasting section, and back to that opening material again. Literally, scherzo in Italian refers to a joke or a game. And I use the expression with you, airlift. I feel that Chopin sort of came in and he sort of airlifted the scherzo out of that interior movement identity, and he gave it its own standalone identity. So here we have a scherzo, which is just the piece, and I'm hard pressed to see what is joking or game like about his treatment
exactly.
of this music. It's quite intense, but he does preserve that ABA structure even while sort of inflating it to greater proportions. So this is a healthy 11-minute duration, something in that vicinity.
Scherzo number 2 by Chopin. The pianist, Andrew Armstrong.
Thank you.
was John Field who described Frédéric Chopin as a sick room talent, but I don't think he heard him play that. My guest, Andrew Armstrong, played it today, the Scherzo No. 2 by Chopin. Were there any keys that you didn't touch? If so, I didn't see them.
Touched a few extra.
Extra. Quite a fantastic bravura piece there. Well, shall we, for the sake of contrast, then hear the sort of the other side of Chopin?
Let's do it.
As long as you're here. So this is one of the nocturnes, and speaking of John Field, John Field gets the credit for inventing the piano nocturne, and his pieces are charming.
Attractive.
And yes, mm-hmm. and attractive, but they just don't have something that Chopin's pieces have.
Chopin's voice is just so distinctive. His harmonic language is sophisticated from the very start and incredibly avant-garde in the later works, of which we're not dipping into today, into which we're not dipping today. This is Opus 15, number 2, the F-sharp major nocturne. So still early, but you can still hear that early distinctive Chopin way with melody and his own harmonic language. Again, many of the nocturnes happen to be in an ABA structure. This one is as well. For my money, this is the most innocent, beautiful expression of love. You know, maybe we're talking first love even. Maybe, teenagers at a fair. And the B section, to my way of hearing it, whisks us away to that kind of special summer night where the air is heavy and buzzing with expectation and romance. It's a pretty miraculous B section, just the atmosphere that's created. If you're driving out there, Wisconsin, you probably want to pull over for that part. Your pulse might quicken and then come back to that opening expression again, the A section, which somehow has been changed by the B section. There's a whole new level of vulnerability that inflects it then. Thank you.
You have to let that one breathe, don't you? And in which nocturne was that, Andrew?
That's Opus 15, number 2 in F sharp major.
It's one of the earlier ones by Frédéric Chopin.
Indeed.
And now we have one more from our Buck studio here, live from Andrew Armstrong, who's performing with and also doing some, what'd you call it? Teaching, obviously.
Teaching, coaching. We are doing something kind of neat where we're coaching from within the groups. So we have faculty players playing right alongside, which is something they do in Quebec at Domaine Forger, and they do it at Marlborough.
Sounds like a great idea.
In Vermont. It really kind of fast forwards the whole process of just kids soaking things up like a sponge.
And this is at the Green Lake Festival of Music. They're doing that now. Well, so we've heard two from Chopin, and Claude Debussy certainly knew his Chopin, but like Chopin, he was very much his own stylist.
Boy, that's so true. One of the we played a faculty concert the other night, and Matthew Michalik, who's in Lawrence at Appleton, a wonderful violist, and he's been so great with the kids. He asked me if we could play a viola and piano version of Debussy's Beau Soir, that really incredible small form, big feelings. And I had never realized until we were just about to perform it, it was made known to me that it was written when Debussy was 15 or 16.
Oh, really?
So I mention all this to say Chopin and Debussy somehow both sort of kind of like Athena springing from Zeus's forehead, or Richard the Third being born with a full set of teeth already. They were they were sort of hatched, fully formed, as it were.
they may not have been born with their choppers, but they were born with their chops.
I'm going to have to keep up with you. That's a good one.
But the Engulfed Cathedral is a great name, but it's actually descriptive.
Yeah, indeed. There is a legend about, there really is a submerged cathedral at Yves, Y-V in France. And the legend is that Debussy had the picture in his mind of kind of an ancient story of this magical ceremony by which this massive cathedral, deep under the water where it couldn't be seen or detected in any way, every, whatever it was, 500 years or something.
At least 100.
At least 100 years, beg your pardon. And it would slowly rise out of the water, and the bells would ring this great melody, and then it would slowly return again.
Kind of Brigadoon-like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is all described in the music very effectively.
Incredibly.
Very evocatively. La Cathédrale Engloutière, or the Engulfed Cathedral.
I like to say, if you could never dream... If you gave a composer the assignment of somehow writing in music on the 88 keys, the immediate sense of ancientness, of stillness, of great distance, but also of great massiveness, you could never come up with any miracle like his very first few notes of this piece.
It rises from the sea and it sinks back into the sea. That engulfed cathedral of Claude Debussy has rendered live in our Buck studio today by my guest, Andrew Armstrong. And actually, we'll get into one of the recordings that you made with violinist James Ennis, Canadian-born violinist who's been here a couple of times now. How did that come about?
Well, we had a lot of mutual friends back in the early aughts, when he was at Juilliard and I was at Columbia, and we kind of traveled in similar circles, and I always heard, you should meet this guy, James Ennis. And it came to pass in, I believe it was the year 2001, it's a strange thing, as a pianist, I was playing a lot of piano recitals in those days, but I did have one venue that said, would you put together a program with violinists? And so I asked a mutual friend, do you think James would do it? And he said, it's one way to find out, here's his number. And he did it, and we became instant close friends. It was just one of those things where it felt like he'd been your brother all along. And
he's very congenial.
He's mm-hmm. terribly down to earth and humble about his gifts, and he's salt of the earth in a way. We've had many great adventures since then. It's been one of the very great gifts of my life.
And collaborating on some Beethoven, actually all 10 of the Beethoven violin sonatas. And have you recorded all of them?
Nope, we're in the process of completing the recording. 2020, of course, is the year of Beethoven's 250th birthday. He's really getting up there and aging beautifully. And actually, I should have mentioned to you, we will be playing the cycle in several cities around the globe, and one of those is Northwestern. We're going to play it at Northwestern. We'll play one concert in January of this coming winter, and then we'll play two concerts in January of 2020, just as the birth year hits, and we'll play all 10 violin sonatas in those concerts, spread out between them, not all 10 each concert. I think we'd both have coronaries if we tried that.
Yeah. The most famous of the sonatas being the so-called Kreutzer Sonata, which even inspired a famous short story.
Yes, yes.
And what did we find in the finale of that?
Well, the finale is such needful medicine at that point, because the first movement is unspeakably intense. It's in A minor, and it's just going, it's kind of a concerto for both instruments, and somehow the orchestra part isn't written out, but it's just really intense music making. Even the second theme, which goes into the major, is in many respects almost more intense than the first movement. And then the second movement is a fairly sprawling set of variations, really a big undertaking. So what do you write for your finale at that point? He just gave us unmitigated joy in this A major, this running along in triple meter. So it feels like it's constantly tumbling forward with expectation and joy.
And here it is, the finale of Beethoven's Kreutzer Sonata. The violinist is James Ennis, and the pianist, my guest today, Andrew Armstrong. Have the finale of the Kreutzer Sonata by Beethoven, inspired a famous story by Tolstoy, and you heard it played by James Ennis, violin, and Andrew Armstrong, piano. And we're just getting toward the solution to our quiz question, and Green Lake Festival of Music is in full sway, and a couple of things going on there that you particularly are highlighting, Andrew.
That's right. As part of our camp, our chamber music camp, we have on July 13th and July 14th, so next weekend, two fun events. July 13th is a faculty chamber music concert. We'll include Korngold's Piano Quintet on there and some fun duos. That's at 7:30 at Demmer Recital Hall, which is in the Rodman Center for the Arts at Ripon College. That's at 7:30 with a 7 o'clock conversation with the artist. And then on July 14th, at 11 a.m. in the morning, same venue, the students of the camp will be playing in hybrid groups interspersed with faculty. We have a whole bunch of fun repertoire to share with everyone. And it's so important that I mention this. It is free to the public. And I say this with some import because this is due to donations from the Green Lake community is an exceptional place. There's so much heart there and so much culture there. And so they've donated a lot of money to make these things free. They accept donations from people that come to the concert and want to contribute. But you can just come for $0 and hear great art.
Well, thanks for sharing some of yours with us today. And this is just one more, not Morgan, but the predecessor to it, as it turns out, in the Richard Strauss Violin Sonata, bringing back you and James Ennis.